Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1144, The Uyghurs and the Destabilization of China, Part 2. This is being recorded on August 5th of the year 2020. We're going to pick up right where we left off at the end of For the Record 1143 with some deliberate overlap. Now, in the first part of our program, we were taking a look at the propagandizing of the treatment of Uyghur or Uyghur Muslims in China's Xinjiang province. We have been told time and time again that there are anywhere from 1 to 2 million Uyghurs in forced re-education centers, unquote. That is a highly dubious claim, and the reasons for doubt are many. For one thing, the sources for this information are not only funded by and large by the U.S. government, but are specifically U.S. intelligence and propaganda outlets, organizations like the U.S.-funded Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders, and one of its financial sources, something that we will come back to in a big way in this program and perhaps some of our analysis of deep politics, namely the National Endowment for Democracy. That was co-founded by former CIA Director William Casey, and that, along with the Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders and the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, are all U.S. intelligence fronts or cutouts. The Jamestown Foundation, another source for the millions of Uyghurs in turn, blah, 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 blah. Also is a U.S. intel neocon front founded by William Casey during the Reagan administration. Perhaps most notably, and this will be something of a transition element, the aforementioned Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation is a direct offshoot of the Captive Nations Committee and was founded by Lev Dobryansky, and the co-chairman of that was Yaroslav Stetsko, who was the World War II leader of the Ukrainian satellite state that fought alongside Nazi Germany. The Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, again, is another U.S. intel front that coalesced on William Casey's watch in the early 1980s, and is part and parcel of the OUNB / ABN milieu that we've looked at for so many, many years in connection with many things. Most recently, in the last 5 or 6 years, the reestablishment of the OUNB fascists in Ukraine. The claims that millions of Chinese were being interned in re-education centers again comes from the Network of Chinese Human Rights Defenders, financed by the U.S. government and by the National Endowment for Democracy. Their claim was based on interviews with 8 Uyghurs, this out of some 20 million in that province. The main source for the millions of Uyghurs, journalistically speaking, is a guy named Adrian Zenz. Now, he is a fellow with the aforementioned Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, an offshoot of the OUNB / ABN milieu that we've looked at so many times. And Zenz is also a militant end times Christian, and one of the major sources for his claims is something called Istiklal Television. By the way, I erred slightly in claiming that his source for the claim came from a jihadist interview on that network. No, the network itself is pan-Turkish in its outlook and features any number of jihadist elements, including a guy named Abulkadir Yapukwan, and he is a spokesman for the East Turkestan Islamic Movement, which is affiliated both with Al-Qaeda and also with the Islamic State. It would be wrong, however, to claim that the actual broadcast on that network was jihadist. That network in general foots jihadists and pan-Turkists, and that was one of the sources for Adrian Zenz's claims. Now, again, in addition to seeing some of the OUNB milieu and the ABN milieu in connection with Xinjiang province and the Uyghurs, we have also seen them materializing in connection with another in considerable measure financed by MEB Hong Kong protest movement. That is to say, many of the individuals and organizations in the, quote, pro-democracy, unquote, demonstrations in Hong Kong have been financed by MEB. And as we looked at in For the Record Program 1103, elements of the Azov Battalion and Pravi Sector had decamped to Hong Kong to help with the demonstrations there. And they appeared in Hong Kong courtesy of a Ukrainian subsidiary of an EU-financed NGO. The Azov Battalion and Pravi Sector influence in Hong Kong has been joined, I guess you could say, by some of the people there, including Joshua Wong, who also has received financing from the MED, and he is kind of the boy wonder and go-to person for the American mainstream media in connection with Hong Kong. From the article, originally from the Gray Zone, we got this from Consortium News from July 10th of 2020 by Ajit Singh, capital S-I-N-G-H. Hong Kong's pro-democracy movement allies with U.S. politicians who seek to crush Black Lives Matter, unquote. And of the joining of sloganeering between the Hong Kong interests and the Pravi Sector and Azov Battalion elements who decamped there, we read, in skipping down, the interest has been mutual with Hong Kong's, quote, Democrats, unquote, drawing inspiration from Ukraine's pro-Western Euromaidan, quote, revolution, unquote, that has empowered far-right fascistic forces. Hong Kong protesters have embraced the slogan, quote, Glory to Hong Kong, unquote, adapted from Slava Ukraini or Glory to Ukraine, a slogan invented by Ukrainian fascists and used by Nazi collaborators during World War II that was repopularized by the Euromaidan movement. And the aforementioned boy wonder of the American mainstream media, Joshua Wong, from that same Gray Zone / Consortium News article. No matter the differences between Hong Kong and Ukraine, our fights for freedom and democracy are the same, Joshua Wong told the Kiev Post in 2019. We have to learn from the Ukrainians and show solidarity. Ukraine confronted the force of Russia. We are facing the force of Beijing, unquote. And the Glory to Hong Kong has morphed into an anthem of sorts. And when that was recently banned by the government in China and Hong Kong, the New York Times reported the banning but did not predictably, I think, get into the origins of the Glory to Hong Kong phrase. It comes from the OUNB. From the New York Times of July 8th of 2020 by Jerry Mullaney, M-U-L-L-A-N-Y, Hong Kong bans protest song and other political expression at schools, unquote. This by Jerry Mullaney, again of the New York Times. Hong Kong's education secretary on Wednesday banned students from singing the protest anthem Glory to Hong Kong posting slogans with political messages or forming human chains saying, quote, the schools are obliged to stop, unquote, such activities. No mention, though, of how, of the genesis of Glory to Hong Kong. The discussion of the OUNB elements that have cropped up in connection with both Hong Kong and Xinjiang again goes back to the discussion concerning Ukraine as the pivot point for the Earth Island, the long stretch of land going from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, the Middle East, Russia, China, and India. That stretch of land contains most of the world's landmass, most of the world's population, and most of the world's natural resources. Geopoliticians have long seen controlling that mass of land as the key to world domination, and they have seen dominating Ukraine as the key to dominating the Earth Island. We will come back to this again. As I have stated in some of the discussions of what I have called the Earth Island boogie, the plan, I think, involving both pan-Turkism and jihadism as exemplified, the twined ideals as exemplified by Mr. Erdogan in Turkey and his neo-Ottoman aspirations. I think the plan ultimately in the West is to break up both Russia and China and to have a Muslim state perhaps called Turkestan stretching from the oil-producing Caucasus, now in Russia, all the way across, including Xinjiang province, another area, not incidentally, very rich in petroleum resources. We have looked at the Muslim Brotherhood and their efforts with Uyghur jihadis in a number of programs going back to the immediate aftermath of September 11th. We are going to be taking a look at another Gray Zone article about the World Uyghur Congress, and we're going to take a look at a fellow named Issa, ISA, Yusuf, Y-U-S-U-F, Alptekin, A-L-P-T-E-K-I-N, and we looked at his son, Erkin, E-R-K-I-N, Alptekin, in our series, for the record, 547 through 550, dealing with Tibet, dealing with the Muslim Brotherhood and the Uyghurs, and dealing with their links to Western intelligence and attempts to break up, ultimately, both Russia and China and establishing a an Islamic and a Turkic entity in the middle of the Earth Island, which not incidentally would include the petroleum-rich areas of Russia and, or today, Russia in the Caucasus and China. We closed in something of a halting fashion, because I was running out of time, with discussion from a book that is nakedly pan-Turkist and unabashedly pro-Ruzi Nazar in its orientation. It's all over the internet, and it talks about a guy whom we have spoken about in the past named Ruzi Nazar. Nazar was a native of Uzbekistan in the former Soviet Union. He served for a time in the Red Army, was captured by the Third Reich, and then began fighting, perhaps more enthusiastically, for a number of Third Reich formations, including the Turkestan Legion and also the SS Dirlewanger Brigade, that's Dirlewanger. Ruzi Nazar, after fighting for the Third Reich in the Turkestan Legion and in the Dirlewanger Brigade, went to work for not only the CIA, but continued to liaise between CIA and the National Action Party, or National Movement Party, of Arpaslan Türkeş. We looked at Türkeş in, among other programs, for AFA Program 14, the first of our two programs dealing with the World Anti-Communist League. Türkeş was an advocate of having Turkey come into World War II on the side of the Axis. He was then Turkey's representative at NATO. He founded a pan-Turkist fascist political party, the aforementioned National Action Party or National Movement Party. That organization and its youth wing, the Grey Wolves, were involved with shooting Pope John Paul II, something that was appears to have been a provocation. It ultimately, with proper media spin, was blamed incorrectly on the former Soviet Union. We did a massive series of programs about the shooting of the Pope, AFA programs 17 through 21. Now, in, for the record, in AFA program 21, and previously to that in AFA number 14, we took a look at the fact that Ruzi Nazar, while working for CIA, was involved with the National Action Party or National Movement Party at the same time that one of its members, Mehmet Ali Agha, shot Pope John Paul II. It turns out that the Grey Wolves are the Turkish component of the Stay Behind or Gladio networks, in which fascist combatants were set up as a reserve military force to ostensibly at least serve as resistance to a Soviet invasion or a communist political takeover. In practice, the Stay Behind and Gladio networks served as the breeding ground, I guess one could say, for right-wing terrorism. Now, we're going to read a short section, or reread a short section from a book by Enver Alpaly, A-L-P-A-Y-L-I, I may be mispronouncing that. It's called A Dark Path to Freedom, Ruzi Nazar from the Red Army to the CIA. Now, bear in mind Ruzi Nazar's work for the CIA, his presence inside of the National Action Party at the time when Mehmet Ali Agha shot the Pope, and bear in mind also something else that we looked at in AFA program number 14 and came back to in number 21. Ruzi Nazar represented the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations at the Wacol 1984 conference. So this guy was an actual member. He represented the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations that was founded by Yaroslav Stretzko. We talked about ABN in a big way in, for the record, program number 1098 through to 1101. We talked about the ABN in many other shows as well. But when we see the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation sponsoring the likes of Adrian Zenz to generate, you know, millions of Uyghurs in concentration camps, et cetera, which in turn has been the vehicle or has been a propaganda platform to justify sanctions against Chinese and other countries' business interests who are seen as complicit with what is allegedly going on in Xinjiang province. Ruzi Nazar, again, representing the ABN at the 1984 Wacol Conference in Dallas, and having fought for the Third Reich and then gone to work for the CIA like so many other Third Reich alumni, we're going to take a look at Ruzi Nazar's networking with Isa Yusuf Alpekin, the founder of the World Uyghur Congress and an individual with many, many interesting connections. Now, this is at the Bandung Conference in Indonesia in the mid-50s. That was a conference of non-aligned nations. And it was there that Ruzi Nazar, along, by the way, with Gloria Steinem, who was by her own account working with the Independent Research Service at the Bandung Conference, Ruzi Nazar was working in an anti-communist capacity at this conference at the same time. Now, note here his networking with the Uyghur interests, because this is another area of both pan-Turkist and Third Reich slash Underground Reich networking with the interests that are holding forth inside of the World Uyghur Congress and that we have looked at in many, many shows. From the Enver Alpaly book, speaking of Ruzi Nazar, He did not have the right to speak at the Bandung conference, but he was able to organize a press conference for the journalists who had come from the four corners of the world to cover the event, including around 30 from the USSR. Ruzi told the press office of his plans, and they informed journalists and delegates of the press conference to be given by Ruzi Nazar, observer delegate from Turkestan and a former officer in the Turkestan Legion. The Turkestan Legion was put together by the Third Reich. Speaking of a fellow named Seyit Shamil, who had come from the North Caucasus, Seyit Shamil had wanted to come to Bandung along with Uyghur leader Isa Yusuf Alpekin, the former prime minister of the Republic of East Turkestan, which had been broken up by the Chinese armies in 1949. But Shamil was the only one to obtain a visa, as the Chinese government had put pressure on the Indonesian government to stop Alpekin being given one. They had gone together from Istanbul to Karachi, where Alpekin had again applied for a visa and been turned down. The Uyghur leader decided to wait in Pakistan for Shamil to return. So again, note the networking here between Ruzi Nazar, Third Reich alumni, goes to work for the CIA, represents the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations at the 1984 Dallas Wackel Conference, and was inside of the National Action Party and Grey Wolf milieu in Turkey at the time of the shooting of Pope John Paul II. Note here, Ruzi Nazar's networking in a pan-Turkist and pro-CIA-slash-anti-communist capacity with Isa Yusuf Alpekin. Now, he was, as mentioned here, head of the Republic of East Turkestan, now seen basically as an area denied them by the Chinese. East Turkestan is how Uyghur activists and advocates, that's what they call Xinjiang province, and they favor secession of the mineral and petroleum-rich Xinjiang province, and it's uniting in a Turkic state all along the very center of the Earth Island, including the petroleum-producing areas of the North Caucasus, now inside of Russia. We're going to, for the balance of this program and probably stretching into the next program, we're going to talk about the World Uyghur Congress. Now, once again, throughout here, the omnipresence of U.S. intelligence cutouts and outlets like, again, the Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, Radio Free Liberty, organizations like the National Endowment for Democracy, and various organizations that are basically more or less straightforward U.S. intelligence and U.S. government propaganda cutouts. In addition to the ubiquitous presence of U.S. intel in the World Uyghur Congress milieu, note as well the roles of elements of this milieu with the U.S. Interrogation efforts in Guantanamo. I wonder about the presence of Admiral Harry Harris, Jr., who is formerly the Chief of Naval Operations in the entire Pacific Theater. Now he is U.S. Ambassador to Korea. I suspect he is, in fact, either ONI and or CIA. He is a very important, powerful man, and I think it is highly unlikely that he would have been relegated to a minor ambassadorial post unless he was part of the full court press against China. More about that later. It is at the very least tone deaf for the U.S. to have appointed one of the relatively small number of military and diplomatic personnel of Japanese American heritage to that very sensitive position of U.S. ambassador to South Korea. But note that Harry Harris was the former commander-in-chief of the Guantanamo Interrogation Center, and that the Uyghurs have been involved with that interrogation program themselves, one of many, many U.S. intelligence links to the Uyghur milieu. Now, note the networking of Issat Yusuf Alptekin and the World Uyghur Congress with a progression of fascist organizations over much of the 20th and 21st century. Note that Issat Yusuf Alptekin was associated with, was a strong ally during the Chinese Civil War of the narco-fascist regime of Chiang Kai-shek and the Kuomintang. We have also noted the Uyghur involvement with the Grey Wolves, again, the youth wing of the National Action Party, and the organization that comprised the Stay Behind / Gladio component for NATO member Turkey. Also, the Uyghurs have, as we have seen in our past program, have networks with various Islamic offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood, including Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State. And again, note that, as seen in the passage I've just read you from that Enver Al-Tayri book, note the networking and as of the mid-1950s between people like Ruzi Nazar of the ABN, of the CIA, of the Derlewanger Brigade, of the East Turkestan Legion, with Issat Yusuf Alptekin and the Uyghur milieu. For the balance of this program, and certainly running, I'm sure running into the next program, we're going to be reading an article from The Gray Zone from March 5th of 2020. It is by Ajit Singh, A-G-I-T, last name S-I-M-G-H, Inside the World Uyghur Congress, the U.S.-backed right-wing regime change network seeking the fall of China, unquote. While posing as a grassroots human rights organization, the World Uyghur Congress is a U.S.-funded and directed separatist network that has forged alliances with far-right ethno-nationalist groups. The goal spelled out by its founders is clear: the destabilization of China and regime change in Beijing. In recent years, few stories have generated as much outrage in the West as the condition of Uyghur Muslims in China. Reporting on the issue is typically represented through seemingly spontaneous leaks of information and expressions of resistance by Uyghur human rights activists struggling to be heard against a tyrannical Chinese government. True or not, nearly everything that appears in Western media accounts of China's Uyghur Muslims is the product of a carefully conceived media campaign generated by an apparatus of right-wing, anti-communist Uyghur separatists funded and trained by the U.S. government. A central gear in Washington's new Cold War against China, this network has a long history of relationships with the U.S. national security state and far-right ultra-nationalists. At the heart of this movement is the World Uyghur Congress, or WUC, an international Uyghur organization that claims to be engaged in a, quote, peaceful, nonviolent, and democratic, unquote, struggle for, again, quoting, human rights, unquote. The WUC considers China's northwestern Xinjiang region to be East Turkestan and sees its Uyghur Muslim inhabitants not as Chinese citizens, but instead as members of a pan-Turkic nation stretching from Central Asia to Turkey. This is key here. The World Uyghur Congress considers China's northwestern Xinjiang region to be East Turkestan, unquote, and sees its Uyghur Muslim inhabitants not as Chinese citizens, but instead as members of a pan-Turkic nation stretching from Central Asia to Turkey. And we've talked about the pan-Turkic movement in many shows, including the aforementioned AFA program number 14 and in number 21 as well. AFA 21. We've spoken about that in many, many For the Record programs as well. Continuing. As this investigation establishes, the World Uyghur Congress is not a grassroots movement, but a U.S. government-backed umbrella for several Washington-based outfits that also rely heavily on U.S. funding and direction. Today, it is the main face and voice of a separatist operation dedicated to destabilizing the Xinjiang region of China and ultimately toppling the Chinese government. While seeking to orchestrate a color revolution with the aim of regime change in Beijing, the WUC and its offshoots have forged ties with the Grey Wolves, a far-right Turkish organization that has been actively engaged in sectarian violence from Syria to East Asia. None of these links seems to have troubled the WC sponsors in Washington. If anything, they have added to the network's appeal, consolidating it as one of the most potent political weapons the U.S. wields in its new Cold War against China. The World Uyghur Congress promotes itself as, quote, an opposition movement against Chinese occupation of East Turkestan that, quote, represents the collective interests, unquote, and is, again quoting, the sole legitimate organization of the Uyghur people, both in East Turkestan and abroad, unquote. Headquartered in Munich, Germany, the World Uyghur Congress is an international umbrella organization with a network of 33 affiliates in 18 countries around the world. The WUC and its affiliates, particularly the Uyghur American Association, Uyghur Human Rights Project, and Campaign for Uyghurs, are cited in nearly every Western media report on China's Uyghur Muslims. From its inception, the WUC has been backed by the National Endowment for Democracy, or NED. With millions in U.S. taxpayer money, the NED and its subsidiaries have backed opposition parties, civil society groups, and media organizations in countries targeted by the U.S. for regime change. Philip Agee, the late CIA whistleblower, described the work of the NED as a more sophisticated version of the old-fashioned covert operations that Langley used to engineer. Nowadays, Agee explained, again quoting, instead of having the CIA going around behind the scenes and trying to manipulate the process by inserting money here and giving instructions secretly and so forth, they now have a sidekick, which is this National Endowment for Democracy, or NED. Agee's assessment was confirmed by Alan Weinstein, W-E-I-N-S-T-E-I-N, a founding member of the NED. Weinstein told the Washington Post in 1991, quote, a lot of what we do today was done covertly 25 years ago by the CIA. When the WUC was founded in 2004, the NED's then Senior Asia Program Officer, Louisa Cohn Grieve, G-R-E-V-E, praised the move as a, quote, great accomplishment, unquote. The NED has provided the WUC with millions of dollars in funding, including $1,284,000 since 2016 alone, and millions of dollars in additional funding to WUC affiliate organizations. The grants are earmarked for training Uyghur activists and youth in media advocacy and lobbying, quote, to raise awareness of and support for Uyghur human rights, unquote, and with a particular focus on U.S. Congress, European Parliament, and the UN. In 2018, the National Endowment for Democracy provided the WUC and its offshoots with close to $665,000, according to the former organization's website. The NED has played a direct role in molding the direction and politics of the WUC. Besides honeycombing WUC-affiliated organizations with NED operatives like Colm Grieve, the NED has sponsored and organized annual leadership training seminars, unquote, for the WUC since 2007. Many leading members of the WUC have also worked in senior positions for Radio Free Asia and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. These U.S. government-run news agencies were created by the CIA during the Cold War to project propaganda into China and the Soviet Union and to stir up opposition to communism on these countries' frontiers. Unsurprisingly, the WUC is tightly aligned with Washington's foreign policy agenda and hostile new Cold War strategy, which seeks to contain and impede the rise of China. The WUC regularly meets with and lobbies U.S. and Western politicians, urging them to isolate and, quote, increase the pressure on China, unquote, ratchet up economic sanctions and curb ties with China, as well as withdrawing Western companies from the region. The WUC celebrated the passage of the Uyghur Act of 2019 by the U.S. House of Representatives in December of 2019. The bill, which called on the Trump administration to enact sanctions against the Chinese government, was the latest in a string of anti-China achievements. This regime change apparatus has made its strongest impact through the media, providing a constant source of self-styled Uyghur dissidents and human rights horror stories to eager Western reporters. The exposure of the WUC and its affiliates receive The exposure the WUC and its affiliates receive extends well beyond corporate media outlets known for echoing Washington's foreign policy talking points. Even ostensibly adversarial, progressive, and left-wing media such as The Intercept, Amy Goodman's Democracy Now!, and Jacobin Magazine have provided them with an uncritical platform. While adopting the WUC's narrative, these self-styled alternative outlets never seem to mention the close bonds the organization and its offshoots have forged with the U.S. national security state and right-wing ethno-nationalist movements abroad. But the relationships are no secret. In fact, they appear to be a source of pride for the WUC leadership. And then the next section of the article, the far-right roots of the Uyghur, quote, human rights, unquote, movement. Behind its carefully constructed human rights brand, the Uyghur separatist movement emerged from elements in Xinjiang which view socialism as, quote, the enemy of Islam, unquote, and which sought Washington's support from the outset, presenting themselves as eager foot soldiers for U.S. hegemony. The founding father of this separatist movement was Issa Yusuf Alpekin, again, the fellow we saw networking with Ruzi Nazar of the ABN, CIA, and Oskar Durlevanger Brigade at the Bandung Conference in the mid-1950s. Continuing, and repeating this last sentence. The founding father of this separatist movement was Issa Yusuf Alpekin. His son, Erkin Alpekin, founded the World Uyghur Congress and served as the inauguration's inaugural president. the senior alpaca and the first, who is referred to as, quote, our late leader, unquote, by the WUC, and current President Bilkun Issa, one more time. The senior alpacan, again, Issa Yusuf Alpacan, is referred to as, quote, our late leader, unquote, by the WUC, and current President Bilkun Issa. Born at the turn of the 20th century, Alpacan was the son of a local government Xinjiang official. He received a largely Islamic education as a youth, as his family intended for him to be a religious scholar. During the Chinese Civil War that raged between the nationalists and communists from 1945 to 1949, Alpacan served under the nationalist Kuomintang administration in Xinjiang. Throughout this period, the Kuomintang received massive military and economic backing from the U.S., including billions of dollars in cash and military hardware, along with the deployment of tens of thousands of U.S. Marines in an effort to quash the Chinese Revolution. At the same time, according to historian Linda Benson, Alpacan, quote, became more active in both the Kuomintang and national-level politics, and met several times with Kuomintang leader Chiang Kai-shek personally. For Alpacan and fellow travelers advancing Turkic nationalism and the region's eventual independence, quote, equally important was the necessity of protecting the land they called East Turkestan from Soviet and Chinese communism, both of which were viewed as real and present dangers to Islamic peoples. For the Kuomintang, Uyghur activists like Alpacan made prime candidates for Xinjiang's provincial administration. As Benson explained, quote, the essential qualification for such appointees was that they be anti-communist and anti-Soviet, unquote. In his memoirs, Alpacan revealed that he, quote, sought to eliminate all Russians and leftists in the government, unquote, and said that, again, quoting, schools were also encouraged to include religious instruction in their curriculum, unquote. A fervent opponent of miscegenation, Alpacan worked to prevent intermarriage between Han Chinese and Uyghur Muslims. During his time in government, religious fundamentalists, quote, attacked the houses of Han Chinese who were married to Muslim women. The mob abducted the Muslim wives, and in some cases, the unfortunate women were forced to marry old Muslim men, unquote. Though the violence killed numerous Han Chinese, it proceeded without any government response during Alpacan's tenure. As the civil war wore on, Alpacan grew frustrated with the declining power of the nationalists and met with U.S. and British consuls in Xinjiang, beseeching the twin powers to deepen their intervention in China and the region. With the coming victory of the Chinese Revolution, Alpacan went into exile in 1949. Alpacan eventually settled in Turkey, emerging as the preeminent leader of the Uyghur separatist movement throughout the latter half of the 20th century. He set out to enlist international support for the cause of East Turkestan independence, courting leading U.S. officials and far-right neo-Ottomanist ideologues in Turkey. The Uyghur separatist leader wrote to then-U.S. President Richard Nixon on several occasions, pleading for him to support East Turkestan separatism. In a 1969 missive to the president, Alpacan declared full-throated support for the U.S. war on Vietnam. Quote, we are hopeful and pleased that the U.S. as a fortress of liberty is protecting captive nations, unquote, he stated. Alpacan then pleaded for his, quote, excellency, unquote, Nixon and the U.S., the most, quote, the most imminent protector of captive nations, unquote, to support East Turkestan independence. Al Peckin wrote Nixon the following year as well to warn of the evils of Red China, unquote. He branded the country a great menace with the whole world as led by the United States of America is confronting. This menace is now in the process of evolution to engulf the earth. If time is allowed, it can upset the balance of the world to disadvantage the free nations, unquote. The whole world, still quoting here from Al Peckin's letter to Nixon, the whole world has reason to be apprehensive of Red China, unquote, Al Peckin insisted to Nixon, for it is likely to be an irresistible threat on earth. China today is one of the biggest nations in the world to where the Marxist teach has been implemented. This is how he's writing here. The English is less than optimum. Continuing. China may prove to be a greater menace to all the world, and this menace is likely to cause a total destruction to the free nations if they are not prudent and foresighted, unquote. Al Peckin advised Nixon to combat the, quote, Chinese war of world conquest, unquote, by supporting separatist movements, namely that of East Turkestan nationalists, and by, quote, speeding up the process of the dismemberment of the Chinese Empire, unquote. Mapping out a detailed regime change strategy for Washington, Al Peckin urged the U.S. to generate support for his cause among the, quote, free world, unquote, set up an academic institute to study every aspect, unquote, of minority nationalities living within China, develop media propaganda targeting minority nationalities by operating a, quote, radio network beaming at these peoples in their respective languages, unquote, devise a plan to secure the collaboration, unquote, of minority nationalities, and, quote, train the children of the non-Chinese exiles abroad, unquote. In 1970, Al Peckin traveled to Washington to meet with members of the U.S. Congress and address the House of Representatives. While appealing for Washington's support, Al Peckin developed strong ties with the Turkish far right. Their bonds rested on a solid foundation of anti-communist zeal and pan-Turkic neo-Ottomanist nationalism. On numerous occasions, Al Peckin met with Alparslan Türkeş, a fascist. Beginning again. On numerous occasions, Al Peckin met with Alparslan Türkeş, a fascistic ultra-nationalist who believed ardently in Turkish ethnic superiority over minorities like the Kurds and the Armenians, and for whom the eradication of communism among the Turkic populations of Soviet Central Asia and Xinjiang was, quote, the dream he had most cherished, unquote. Alparslan Türkeş was the longtime leader of the far-right Nationalist Action Party, or Nationalist Movement Party, and its paramilitary arm, the Grey Wolves. According to the Washington Post, he headed a murderous group of right-wing terrorists, unquote, who were, again quoting, blindly nationalist, fascist, or nearly so, and bent on the extermination of the communists, unquote. The fascistic militant group killed numerous left-wing activists, students, Kurds, and notoriously attempted to assassinate Pope John Paul II. With military funding from the U.S., Türkeş co-founded the Turkish cell of Operation Gladio, the U.S. and NATO-backed network of stay-behind, unquote, anti-communist paramilitary groups that carried out numerous acts of terror and sabotage across Europe. Al Peckin appears to have shared the hateful politics of Türkeş and the Turkish far-right, often expressing anti-Armenian views, including denial of the Armenian genocide and claims that Armenians were murderers of innocent Turks. The Turkish right wing has embraced the East Turkestan separatist movement with open arms, appealing to them as a key base of political support. Quote, "The martyrs of East Turkestan are our martyrs," unquote, stated Recep Tayyip Erdogan, then mayor of Istanbul, as he inaugurated a park named in honor of Alpekin following the death of the Uyghur nationalist in 1995. He is today, Erdogan, the head of Turkey. In recent decades, the Uyghur separatist movement has deepened its connections with Washington and the U.S. national security state. The WUC and its affiliate organizations, including the Uyghur American Association, Uyghur Human Rights Project, and Campaign for Uyghurs, are made up of individuals with direct ties to the U.S. government, military, and regime change establishment. Inspired by pro-free market color revolutions spawned by the U.S. government in the former Soviet republics of Central Asia, the WUC's regime change network has set out a clear goal of destabilizing China and toppling its government. In 2004, Erkin Alpekin was named the inaugural president of the WUC. He is the son of the far-right, ultra-nationalist father figure of the Uyghur separatist movement, the above-mentioned Esat Yusuf Alpekin, whose background is explored again later in this article. From 1971 to 1995, Erkin Alpekin worked for the U.S. government-funded Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty media network. Speaking at the funeral of his father in 1995, the junior Alpekin outlined his anti-communist, separatist views and articulated his desire to destroy China. Quote, 10 years ago, no one believed that the USSR would fall apart. Now you can see that. Many Turkic countries have their freedom now. Today, the same situation applies to China. We believed in the not-too-distant future we will see the fall of China and the independence of East Turkestan. The World Uyghur Congress describes Alpekin as, quote, close friend of the Dalai Lama, the U.S.-backed, CIA-funded figurehead for Tibetan separatism. We are working very closely with the Dalai Lama, Alpekin told the Washington Post in 1999. He is a very good example for us, unquote. Interrupting briefly, in the For the Record series 547, 548, and 549, we dealt with not only the CIA support for the Dalai Lama, but even before that, the Dalai Lama was networking with SS elements who saw the Tibetans as an offshoot of the mythical Aryan people. So it was a guy named Bruno Begay who led an SS expedition to Tibet. He then became a war criminal when he ordered the execution of some 130-odd Soviet prisoners of war so that their physiologies could be studied for SS anthropological purposes. As of the 1990s, Bruno Begay was actually a member of the Tibetan government in exile. Heinrich Harrer was another SS man who was actually the Dalai Lama's tutor. And again, we know that the SS affiliations and CIA affiliations of the Dalai Lama in the aforementioned programs 547, 548, and 549. We came back to those in some of our discussions with Peter Lavenda and his book, The Hitler Legacy. Continuing about the World Uyghur Congress. In 2006, Erkin Alpekin was succeeded as WUC president by Rebya Rebiya Kadir, K-A-D-E-E-R, a self-described multimillionaire real estate and trading entrepreneur who profited off of China's economic reforms of the 1980s and claims to have once been the seventh wealthiest individual in China. According to the New York Times, Kabir's, quote, dissidents brought the end of her Audi, her three villas, and her far-flung business empire, unquote. Kabir's husband, Sadiq Ruzi, R-O-U-Z-I, worked for U.S. government media outlets, The Voice of America and Radio Free Asia. During her tenure as WUC president, Kabir met with then-U.S. President George W. Bush on several occasions. As Bush waged his illegal war on Iraq and persecuted Muslim American leadership under the auspices of his so-called War on Terror, Kabir appealed to the U.S. head of state to pick up the cause of Uyghur Muslims. Quote, I was deeply honored to meet with the president, Kabir stated. She, quote, expressed gratitude for President Bush's demonstrated commitment but to promoting freedom and democratic reform in the People's Republic of China. And at the 2007 Democracy and Security International Conference in Prague, Bush praised Kabir as a human rights defender in his address before the gathering. The conference was organized by the Prague Security Studies Institute, a think tank that aims to advance free market societies in post-communist states, and the Abelson Institute for Strategic Studies, an Israeli outfit named for ultra-Zionist Republican casino baron Sheldon Abelson. Conference partners included the U.S. government and NATO. Kabir maintained close relationships with both the Dalai Lama and Vaclav Havel, the leader of the Velvet Revolution, unquote, which brought down Czechoslovakia's communist government. Havel was a, quote, major proponent of NATO, unquote, and instrumental to the Western military alliance's eastward expansion. Kabir described Havel as, quote, an uncompromising advocate for truth, justice, and peace, and pointed to his political accomplishments as an example to be emulated for China. Quote, Mr. Havel's vision for the Czech people speaks to Chinese Democrats today, unquote, wrote Kabir following Havel's death, and, quote, contains the seeds of a new era for political reform in China. The current president of the World Uyghur Congress is Dolkun, D-O-L-K-U-N, ISA, capital I-S-A, winner of the 2019 Democracy Award from the NED. In 2016, ISA received a human rights award from the far-right Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, which was established by the U.S. government in 1993. In his acceptance speech, ISA emphasized the Uyghurs' resistance to communism, unquote, and that, again, we, quoting, we will not stop our work until we consign this destructive ideology, in the words of Ronald Reagan, to the ash heap of history, unquote. ISA regularly lobbies U.S. and Western politicians to intensify their new Cold War agenda by escalating economic sanctions and curbing ties with China. Among those he has met with in recent years are Trump administration White House officials, right-wing Republican Senator Ted Cruz, and the fervently anti-China acting director of intelligence of national intelligence, Richard Grenell, G-R-E-N-E-L-L. And note the award given to Dolkun ISA from the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. Again, an offshoot of the OUNB ABM milieu that we have looked at so many times. ABM represented at the Dallas WACL Conference by the aforementioned Ruzi Nazar, networking with the Uyghurs at the Bandung Conference. We will continue with this analysis in our next program. This concludes, for the record, program number 1144, The Uyghurs and the Destabilization of China, Part 2. This is being recorded on August 5th of the year 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.